This episode is brought to you by the Webcomic Beacon 2012 Spring Comic Book Giveaway. This spring we're going to be giving away 4 copies of the volumes 1 and 2 of Family Bones. That is based on a true story about Ray and Faye Copeland, the serial killers. And along with that, there's going to be 1 CD pack giveaway of The Boobles, which is a mammary parody of Beatles songs. So you can go ahead and check it out at webcastbeacon.com/giveaway for more information on how to enter and a little bit more information on the things you can win.
Now broadcasting the Webcomic Beacon.
It's Sunday, March 10th, 2012, and this is episode 59 of the Webcomic Beacon Newscast with, from BladeBunny.com, Eric Kimball.
Greetings and salutations, Internet.
Our associate news editor, Jason Strasberg.
Hello there.
And I'm your host, Thomas DeVore from 910 Comics. That's 910cmx.com. And let's take a quick look at our top story. There's a website out there called andertoons.com. Cartoons by Mark Anderson that has a terrific story about some of the web tools and advice for the business side of web cartoonists. A number of the links that it brings to us and is things like the Google Analytics. Most of this is going to be stuff that people in the experience have already used, but it really does make life easier for it, such as Google Analytics, which allows you to see who's visiting your site, where they're coming from, and how many times they do it. It gives you both the unique and the repeat visitors. The Google Apps email, Google Reader, a lot of us is Google stuff, but many other tools on there. It's worth a quick look to take a look at, see some of these tools that people do use. And now over in our Buzz section, over at the University of Washington's Henry's Art Gallery, we see from webcomicoverlook.com that they are going to be hosting a gallery showing of webcomic art. The exhibit is called Morning Serial, looking at the art and history of webcomics. It includes a nifty historical overview of the online exhibit and includes art from Dylan Mekonis, Erica Mohn, Evan Dom, Aaron Diaz, Spike Trotman, and Emily Ivey. They will be there at the gallery itself on March 29th on the eve of the Emerald City Comic Con. So go ahead and go take a look at this art. I mean, I'm sure it's going to have a lot of wonderful history of the art of the webcomic process and what's been seen in there, even if we were never contacted to contribute some of our artwork. Another graduate of the webcomic world is Sabretooth Vampire. We see over at digitalspy.com that Sabretooth Vampire, a comic strip from Mike Russell webcomic, that is going and being included within the Dark Horse Presents Anthology series. So, yet another one that is making the transition from webcomics to the print comics, making it into the big leagues, we see. And finally, in our Buzz section, over at Shifty Look, they announced 2 more webcomics which are being developed from the Namco Bandai webcomics video game portals. By making the transition from video games to webcomics, they are increasing their recognition of the brand, as well as giving new stories to go within these storylines and possibly future branches off within the video games themselves. And now over to our business section. Jason, you take it away.
Okay, thanks, Tom. We've got 3 stories in the business section this week. First up, we're going to start from a story from GigaOM, where they talk about the introduction of a new service called License 123. Founded by Jason Nazar of DocStock, License 123 attempts to take all the license and permit applications needed to start and maintain a small business and put them available on one website. So if you want to, say, open a restaurant or a retail shop, Nazar claims that they can facilitate the paperwork. Now, right now the site is still in beta, and it's only available in 6 or 10 states, depending on where you look. But they are planning to reach out to the rest of the country by the end of the year. And the current fee structure calls for an introductory cost of $9.99, but it isn't set in stone. Now, I have to give you a disclaimer here and say that no one at the Webcomic Beacon has tried this service. so we don't know how reputable it is. But if it's something that you find interesting, and again, we're not promoting it, but if it is something that you find that you want to use, please drop us a line and tell us what your experience was like. Next up, we have an article, or actually an analysis from Robot 6 on ICV2's report on Comixology reaching 50 million downloads since its launch in 2009. Now, unlike Diamond, digital comics distributors don't usually release sales numbers, and Comixology doesn't do much to really break down these numbers of downloads and what they are, like which ones were paid and which ones were free. But it does go some small ways in, towards approaching the question of whether digital sales are harming or supporting print. So give it a look. It's a very interesting article. And finally, at the Comics Beat, we get small talk about DC's rollout of their new website with the new look and logo. Now, some of the improvements are video support, live social media updating, and a new commenting system via Facebook. And this means also, as some of you are aware, that the old comment boards are now kaput. But the branding team has released a large digital ad campaign that you've probably already seen, and it rather redundantly encourages DC fans to, quote, interact, react, and respond. Now, the Comic Speak goes even further to point out that because the comment system is organized by Facebook, people will have their real names attached to the comments that they make. So, yes, the end result is going to be very interesting. And that's it for business. I think we can turn it over.
And now over to you, Eric, for our legal division.
Thanks, Tom. We have two stories in the legal department this week. First of all, Diary of a Zombie Kid rises from the grave. On December 28th, the comic called Diary of a Zombie Kid, which was clearly a ripoff of Diary of a Wimpy Kid, was slapped with a restraining order when the creator of Diary of a Wimpy Kid sued Antarctic Press. Well, Antarctic Press has come back with a free comic for Free Comic Book Day, simply named Zombie Kid, which is a reprint of Diary of a Zombie Kid, but taking the most obvious elements out of the comic book, giving it a new cover and a different title. Whether this will hold up and they'll be able to fly under the radar with this, or if it will cause another suit, is yet to be seen. Our second legal story comes to us via Twitter from publisher... The Diary of a Zombie Kid did come to us from Bleeding Cool, I should mention that. Our second story coming to us from Publishers Weekly Twitter and posted originally on WSJ.com is the story of the Justice Department suing Apple and a number of ebook publishers for price collusion. The suit is basically saying that when Apple started its iPad market, it got together with the other with publishers to set a set price on its books. The Justice Department believes that this is a case of price fixing and has investigated. Apple has agreed to negotiate with the Justice Department, and all analysis seems to indicate that this will be resolved quickly, since it's in Apple's best interest not to have an ongoing suit around a market that they are trying to develop. That takes us through our legal department, and I'll hand it back to you, Tom.
Okay, and we're going to take our first break. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back with more news and our discussion right after this.
For over 7 years, the Rampage Network has brought to you almost 100 different webcomics and programming for people to enjoy. Webcomics such as Supernormal Step, Red Moon Rising, Garanos, Alan, Astray 3, Lulz, Blip, Commissioned, Toilet Genie, Plan B, and much more, all at RampageNetwork.com.
Welcome back to episode 59 of the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. Now over to Eric with our education section.
Thank you, Tom. We have three stories in our education section this week. The first story coming to us from Kleefeld's blog, Kleefeld on Comics, talks about an actual brain study that has been done by Neil Cohen on how the brain processes reading comics. It's actually a pretty fascinating story, although it is pretty technical, and showing how we react to different visual stimuluses and how our brains work when we read comics. Next story coming up is step-by-step cover design coming to us from Bryant Paul Johnson. He gives a step-by-step set of instructions on how he builds his covers. It's a good tutorial for those who are looking to see how a artwork comes to final completion. Also in the story of building artwork, we have Ben Caulfield from the famous Dare Detectives and also from work he's done for DreamWorks, showing some of the sketches he's done for graphic storytelling, showing how a story develops. So we have three stories this week. Back to you, Tom.
And I'm going to bring it over. We've got some great news over in the technical world. The top bit of technical news that we have is Apple's announcement of the release of the new iPad. Dropping off the numbering system, what would have been the iPad 3, has a lot of new technology in there, including a new Retina display boasting a 2045 by 1536 resolution. I mean, my heavens, that's higher than my monitor on my good computer. And it's 3.2 million pixels and 264 pixels per inch. There are many other features that are coming along, including the new dual-core A5X CPU, a new rear-facing camera, upgraded camera, and both recording and output in 1080p. So, I mean, you can record your videos at high quality and play them back on your HDTV with absolutely no loss of quality. I know there's a lot of other... I know there's a lot of other stories out there, and apparently this one is enough to make people drop everything and go out and get that new iPad. We also have some news over from Google as well. Google Play has hit the news today, framed as a revamp of the media outlets over at Google. But it's also going to be more oriented towards the Android device as well as websites, giving you games, music, movie videos, books and offers, newspapers, and many other stories, allowing you to greatly increased your usage of your Android devices. And now over for our new section, People in the News. Let's go ahead and go over to Jason for that.
Okay, thanks, Tom. Okay, we have two stories for this new section about people and the comics they produce. First off, from Robot 6, they bring our attention to a blog post by Brian Clevenger of Atomic Robo on their new book, Atomic Robo, Real Science Adventures. What's interesting about this is Clevenger's comment on paying creators for their effort, where he says, "We love being able to pack a little more content into our issues, but we came to hate that it got there by exploiting our friends. Sure, they came to us, in some cases they begged, but if these guys are going to take the time to draw comics for us, they should get paid for the effort." Now, the new book is a collection of these efforts. There are several pieces that either were too short for a full book or just didn't fit into the current Atomic Robo storyline. So, take a look. It looks like it's going to be very promising, especially if you're a fan of the Atomic Robo series like me. And then next up, from the Comics Beat, we have a collection of life lessons from different cartoonists. Now, it's a really good article to take a look. There are some pieces there. Here's some examples like Jerry Al Julian on rejection and insecurity and dealing with them and moving on. Or you could look up Tony Millionaire's article that talks about being a cartoonist and putting your kids through college. And there's one that I really like that's by Faith Erin Hicks, which presents an interpretation of the movie Alien as a saga of the proletariat. So have a look and broaden your mind. And that's it for People News.
And now over to our tidbits. Let's go ahead and hear those tidbits out there, Eric. Take it away.
All right. Thank you, Tom. Tonight we start off with talking about a comic solely created on the iPad. Action Panda Cop, created by Jonathan Woodward, was a comic created solely on the iPad using Strip Designer. Next tidbit, we're talking about Comixology releasing a creator-owned digital omnibus for Comixology containing a number of Jonathan Hickman's short stories, short comics, that is. Last tidbit we have today is Marvel teases online something called an infinite comic and that it will be revolutionary in the digital realm. What that means, no one knows. Given Marvel and DC's track record, it probably means they will bring their digital comics up to 1992 standards. We're really looking forward to it. Maybe they'll get to our century at some point. And moving on to oddities, we have two rather strange comics coming to us this week. We have a look of a John Carter comic. This one remains relatively faithful to the John Carter series in that everyone is naked. It looks like a nudist look at the John Carter story. Very faithful to the actual books, but also a little bit weird. And then we have a story about a person's relationship with Zelda as he grew up and, let's say, discovered his own sexuality. And we'll leave it at that. It's an interesting story coming to us from Comic Alliance, and I did forget to mention that the John Carter story came to us from Comic Speak. That's the oddities, and back to you, Tom.
Okay, let me add my own disclaimer in there. Parents, these are both definitely adult-oriented storylines, both the John Carter, of course, and the Legend of Zelda Phantom Friendship, both of which you'll find links for, as well as the rest of our stories, over on our website. But this is definitely two that you would want to take a look at before allowing your kids to go visit these sites. But we will be back with our discussion with our special guest host, There Is No Source, Stefan Barton Ross, from Hero in Training, right after this.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter at Webcomic Beacon. Email us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail by calling 1-320-310-0922. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic news, tropes, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back to the episode 59 of the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. It's time for our discussion panel. We have with us our regulars with Eric Kimball and Jason Strasberg. But we also have our special guest today from Hero in Training. You may know him better as There Is No Saurus. We know him as Stefan Barton Ross. Hello, Stefan.
Good evening, everyone.
The first thing we're going to talk about is, of course, my favorite whipping boy, DC Comics. The story that we had about DC launching a new website and tying in with Facebook and Twitter and all this other stuff for brand new fan reactions. This is the old guy talking. I mean, I remember back when comics didn't have letter columns, when it didn't really have anything. You had responses from the editors personally to the letter columns, where we had such great pundits as T.M. Maple, better known as the Mad Maple, Roy Thomas, who eventually became a fanzine editor and then worked his way up as writer and editor-in-chief of Marvel Comics, to so many others, to the elimination of the letter columns because the major media didn't want to hear what you're actually having to say, to the return of the letter columns and the introduction of forums for the comics, to the removal of those said forums and letter columns back to the new situation that DC has. Now, my take on it is basically it's another way of DC controlling the spin and the reaction to the new 52. The reaction in the public eye has been torn between extremely negative and fanboyish slavery. Is this really a good way for them to receive some of the feedback when it can be so heavily edited and controlled?
It's the only way they can do it, though, Tom. I mean, here's my argument. There's two things DC is facing. First of all, they have no clue how to moderate a forum or how to deal with social media. They don't know how to do it. They need something that they can tightly control, because every time they've tried to do something to allow people in, it's gone completely it's gone completely wild and it fell apart. The DC forums were a disaster. I mean, there were spam bots all over it, and it just made people angry. So they have to do this because they just can't do it any other way. And the second thing is, in DC and Marvel are in this very unique position that all of their fans are people who want to take the jobs of the people who are actually making the comics. You know, that's the attitude of everyone who reads Batman. I could write Batman better. You know, that's not the attitude of everyone who reads a webcomic. You don't have anyone reading a comic, webcomic, saying, "Oh, I could do this better." They have to do it this way.
I disagree. I mean, we saw, with respect to our friends over at Keen, the Keen Spot forums were for a long time basically in no man's land, where it was a lawless west and nobody really controlled anything. I know that when we had a bunch of them come over to the 910 forums, where we do keep a tight control but allow freedom of speech within reason, it was all a matter of moderating and administrating. Why couldn't DC have just gotten some people who actually knew what the heck they were doing?
Because that's not how it works.
I go back to, and the old letter column days, you had missives from people like, and I use the example of TM Maple, the Mad Maple, who wrote great columns, both on the pros and cons of a story. He was well respected, and God rest his soul. I mean, there was no one before or since who was really like him. He was not a critic of the comics, but more a commentator on the comics.
Yeah.
We don't see that.
The way DC and Marvel is an old boys network. They are the established comic book companies, and this is why we see, they don't have any women in there. They have not reached out to web comics specifically because this is not the way they work. They hire from within. They hire from people they know. They hire from within. When they did the Zuda thing, they didn't go out and get a webcomic expert. They just said, oh, we can do it. We'll just get this guy here who's been our editor and throw him into it, and we'll figure it out. They don't do that. They don't hire from outside. I think it would be great if they did, but
well,
they
it doesn't even have to be from outside, because, I mean, you can take a look at the marketing division. PR division could do a better job of administering, because you have to know how to deal with fans, and especially when you've got such bad press coming off of a certain former editor-in-chief and now co-publisher who basically lambasted fans at conventions.
Yeah, but
this is not what they need.
That indicates to me they have a horrible PR department. you say that the PR department should do it. I swear to God, I think DC has a bunch of monkeys in their PR department. I cannot see a rational PR person ever allowing anything that they've done to happen. They don't have a good PR department. They don't have no clue how to moderate a forum. And moderation is a skill. Moderation is not something we'll just do it. It is a skill.
As a skill. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's something you learn and something you're born with. Yeah. But, I mean, we really can't expect much out of DC, who spent a lot of money to have the DC logo revamped with the swooshy star, which harkened back to the older DC logo, to the peeling sticker logo they now have.
Well, yeah. The thing to keep in mind is that DC and Marvel are still corporations. They're run as a business. They come from that perspective. So when they come up and say, we need to revamp ourselves, they don't go to the audience. They go to the best marketing firm that they could afford. That's a corporate culture thing. And that's what a lot of these problems are stemming from. You hire from within because you're looking for a VP who also has sales experience. You're not looking for a fan who's going to throw 100% of the effort into it. And I think that the fact that they have all become businesses and that they're all looking at the bottom line is why they've revamped, is why probably Marvel is going to, is why DC has produced this new 52, because they have to get new readers in.
Well, I disagree with the fact that PR people can't be fans. I mean, I think back to a former PR person who is not only a fan, but graduated from the PR department to becoming a writer, to becoming a New York Times bestselling writer, Peter David. But I do think that absolutely it's the old guard who really doesn't know what to do with the new technologies, the new media, and bringing in people who they thought might know something about it, making them a co-publisher and watching things go down the drain, but being so far behind that horse that they can't figure out how to get them out of there. But enough of the DC thing right now. Let's go ahead and go on to our next topic of discussion. And that was the Brian Clevenger article talking about how there are people who are doing stories, artists, writers who are doing stories for him in their free time. And the whole Atomic Girl Real Science Adventures, there were a number of them who did it for free. Now, granted, yeah, that's a lot of what we do in webcomics, but it's more with webcomics. It's either artists who are wanting promotion, which is the same reason that a lot of these writers did this for Atomic Robo and do it for other comics as well, print comics and web comics. But also, it's also a matter of ownership. I mean, if you own the property and you create it yourself, there's an amount of control on there. Is what Clevenger is saying, where people who are doing this deserve some sort of money back. Is it exploitation if you have your friends do something like this and they're getting at least the exposure out of it? Stefan, you're our guest. Let's go ahead and bounce that question over to you. I mean, is this a way of abusing the people who are beginning in the business or friends who are doing this type of stuff by not giving them any money back out of it?
It's quite a difficult issue because, I mean, on the face of it, yes, you should, if you're running a business, be paying people to do any kind of work for you. You shouldn't just be taking gift work. That's the way business works. However, I mean, he points out that his friends are coming to him. They're begging him to do these sort of side stories in the comic. It's not like he's really initiating all of this stuff himself. So I think it really comes down to if people are offering this stuff freely and of their own volition without you even asking for it, it's better to use it than not use it, I suppose. But if you're looking for something like that, I don't think it's really fair to say, look, can someone draw this for me? We'll put it in there and you'll get some exposure. You should be saying, we'll put this up for the best person for the job and we'll pay them for it.
Now, there's something very similar to this.
You're to make money off it. If it's a not-for-profit or you're just doing this as a hobby, I mean, that's fine. But the issue comes in when you're viewing making the comic as a business.
Well, let me give a comparison to something else that's going on very similar. Over on DeviantArt, there was a series of fan art stories going up called Transformers Mosaic, where it was little back issue stories, you know, background stories that were completely out of canon from any of the Transformers stories, cartoons, TV shows, or movies. But it gave a little slice of life, gave a little of input, gave a little bit of knowledge about the character, completely written, completely drawn by fans. IDW, the current publisher of Transformers, loved some of these stories and actually got permission from the creators to publish these in the back of the Transformer comics. Was IDW wrong for doing that? I mean, to my knowledge, and I may be wrong on this, but to my knowledge, it was done simply, it was a printing of fan art with the creator's permission and giving them exposure and a little bit of ego saying, hey, I was actually published.
Well, see, the problem comes when, I mean, there's two things. First of all, even if someone offers something to you for free, you can still pay them. They're not going to say, oh, no, no, you're paying me? No, forget it. No, I'm not going to let you use it anymore. I'm only going to let you use it if you don't pay me. So the argument that, well, if people are begging me to use these stories, but I'm making money off of them, but they're begging me, why should I pay them? That's sort of a false argument. Now, I can see the temptation is to, if you got free stuff, take it, because you're desperate. I mean, the more content you can get for the less amount of money, the more you can produce.
Well, it helps your bottom line. Right. I mean, what's wrong with if you're the publisher going and saying, hey, I love this fan art that you've done of our trademarked property. Would you mind if we publish your story? And if the response right off, well,
and paying you going rates.
Do they have to say anything about this? Yeah. Is work that was done that was not authorized and technically is illegal. It is copyright and trademark infringement.
No.
We've talked about this before. But it still could go down. It could cause some problems for the creators. But rather than that, they're saying, hey, we love what you're doing. May we publish it?
Well, first of all, if they ever tried to sue a creator for creating fan art, I mean, that would be the dumbest move I could ever imagine.
Well, we've seen that before from Paramount. It doesn't have to be smart, but it just has to be done.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's nothing keeping you from paying these people. And saying that if I drew fan art in my house and I just had it there, and someone came in and said, oh, I love your fan art, and it's of my copyrighted character, is it okay if I use it? But I'm not going to pay you for it. Yeah, I mean, that's fine. But yet again, you're making money off of me. So yeah. is that fair? I mean,
the issue is if that's the point, if they're using it kind of as part of a selling point for their mainline work. So, for example, if they included these Transformer stories in all their print comics, that's kind of adding to the value of that comic. in a significant way. It's not just like a one-off little, hey, look at this cool thing we posted up on our news site or something like that. For example, there's a lot of webcomics that might have fan art galleries. I wouldn't say putting someone's fan art up in a fan art gallery would be kind of abusing it. It's when you're using it to replace content that you could produce. So for a filler week, for example, or do an alternate storyline, which is going to draw more people. And if it's on your site and it's some sort of major area of content that you're promoting, that sort of stuff where it is really contributing to your business.
Well, I actually don't see the difference between us having a fan art section where people send us fan art, because we, those of us who have fan art sections for our webcomics do have that put up, have a link right there on our front page saying fan art. And that is something that is, quote, a selling point. Are people going there to look exclusively at the fan art? Most of the time, no. But it is an added value, which we get. And we don't give anything to, in the most case, we don't give anything to the people who create this. Sometimes we'll give a quid pro quo and we'll do art for them if they do art for us. But come on, this is webcomics. We rarely change money over hands.
But that's interesting, because with webcomics, there is some, there is a difference here, because when a popular site puts up a fan art from a less popular site, that less popular site gets a lot of traffic, you know, and the exposure argument actually works there, because it is a situation where it equates to real money. The amount it would cost to advertise on said site to get the extra viewers is equal to is value. There is value being given. If I could get fan art on a Penny Arcade, you know, of anything. I mean,
you'd have to get a new server.
I would be making a ton of money, just because I would get all the ad revenues from the increased traffic flow. I would get extra sales. So there is a certain value there. The danger comes when you say, give us fan art for print, and that will give you exposure, because print doesn't really cross over to web very well. Putting an ad in a print newspaper doesn't give you a lot of hits on your website.
Well, I do know that in the Transformers example, that as soon as IDW started publishing some of this stuff, I mean, the news about it spread like wildfire. And the number of people reading and linking to the mosaic stories over on DeviantArt increased by 3 to 4 times.
Except DeviantArt is a free site, so the creators still don't make anything from the DeviantArt. The DeviantArt situation is interesting, because the people who are making those stories on DeviantArt, which is a free site, don't make any money. That made money for DeviantArt. It didn't make money for anyone who's putting those stories up on DeviantArt.
And that's just it. The creators went and put that stuff art, not expecting any money coming back to them. So, I mean, getting the added exposure and ego of being published is something that they were never expected. This is the added bonus above and beyond. Now, if IDW had gone to these people and say, hey, we would like you to do fan art for us, and, oh, yeah, we'll publish it, that would be a completely different thing. But this is something that they had done beforehand. They had done the art gratis for the love of material. And right. Then IDW goes to them and says, hey, we would like to publish that. After you've already put this art up and are already having it, quote, published at no cost by DeviantArt.
By that argument, then you can then say, anyone can go to any webcomic and say, hey, you're already putting this on the web for free. How about you let us publish it for free?
Yep.
Yeah, they can do that. Absolutely.
That kind of goes against first use, though.
Yeah, well, no. I mean, they're not forcing. I'm a publisher.
They don't have the copyright. So.
Well, no, I don't have copyrights. I just say, okay, people like exposure. I'm a publisher. Let's say I'm Diamond. I'm Diamond, and I have an inroad to every comic book company in the country. And I'm going to go on to every webcomic, and I'm going to send them a note. Hey, I see you're putting this stuff up for free. Let me publish this in your book, and you'll get a lot of exposure.
And
I'm not forcing them. I'm not taking it without permission, but I'm not going to pay them a dime.
And
I'm going to get money off of sales of that comic.
The ethical issue here is that every webcomic would take that up. You know, it's not like anyone would be like, what? Put my stuff in print for free? Oh, I just can't do that. You're not paying me. People will do it. but that doesn't necessarily make it right.
I mean, I've used the term graduation before, where webcomics graduate to the vaunted print media, and a lot of them do look at it like that. If someone is going to publish stuff, like, and IDW isn't running whole books of this. This is one page in the back of the book. If they were to do a whole series of free art, there might be a problem with that one. But having one page in the back of the book for people who are creating the artwork for free, I really don't see a problem with that. I mean, that's a smart business point on IDW's part. That's a great way. And I'm sure some of these artists and writers out there are terrific. I can honestly see that IDW or other companies may take a look at that and say, hey, you know, that's a great idea. Let's see if we can't get them to expand out and see what they can do for a full story.
Yeah. The problem is exposure that doesn't translate into real money or real jobs is worthless. You know, if I become the you know, yet again, I let's say I made a fan comic for a Penny Arcade, and Penny Arcade says, oh, we really love that. And we're going to give you a lot of exposure. We're not going to link to any sites where you make money. We're just going to link to your Facebook, but you can't have any sites, any sales on that site. You know, set up a Facebook where just people get to communicate with you. And so they say, you know, because it's our characters and you can't make money off of our characters. And so I get tons of exposure, but it doesn't translate to any real money.
That's
worthless. Yeah.
But I don't think it's worthless. I mean, we can look at it as the chance to grasp the brass ring. Just because you may not get it does not mean that somebody else does not get that shot at it. It's exposure. It is an opportunity and a chance, but it's not a guaranteed thing. It's the lottery.
Yeah. The problem is a lot of companies use that exposure argument to scam people. Yep. You know, they say you get exposure for doing this. I sold one of my comics, and I was talking to the person who bought it about he was going to get a new writer for it. And I said, you must pay this man. I don't care how little it is. You have to pay him something. And he says, oh, I was just going to say it was for exposure, you know, and getting your name out there. And I'm like, no, you cannot do that. You have to pay him something. Doesn't have to be a lot, but you have to pay him something, because the exposure argument is too often used to scam people out of their work.
Okay, and let's go ahead and go over now. We talked a lot about exposure here with the comic publishing. Let's talk about a completely different type of exposure. And that's over with the John Carter movie and the more accurately portrayed originally printed comic that was never printed to finally released on the webcomic version of John Carter. Now, I mean, originally Warlord of Mars and the entire Barsoom stories, and this, which has been released, is it chock full of nudity? Absolutely. But if you've ever read the original Edgar Rice Burroughs stuff, I mean, like I said to the others here before the break, it's Tarzan in space without the loincloth.
Yeah.
Literally. or anything else for that matter.
Yeah.
But I mean, go ahead.
I love this comic so much just because it is such, I mean, and we were talking about this, it's nudity. It's not sexual nudity. It's just naked people and naked Martians and naked apes and naked everything. You know, and there is none of the typical things you see of over sexualizing characters. There's no male gaze in that the camera zooms in on anatomy or anything. It's just everyone happens to be naked all the time.
And we can go back to some of the first artwork that was done, pro artwork that was done for John Carter and Tarzan and Conan and all these other sword and sorcery or sword and science fiction type stories was from Boris Vallejo and Frank Frazetta, they barely had anything covered. It was more of a pasty type thing, but I mean, it goes back to the way the stories were originally written. I mean, Deja Thoris was built and all together. And did the all together.
Stefan, you were talking about the nudity without sexuality.
Yeah, and I suppose it's just as a webcomic creator, and I actually just realized that I've had to deal with this recently. I completely forgot because I've recently had a nude character. a female nude character. So dealing with how do I portray certain things without making it seem sexual? How do I do this in a way that's tasteful, because my comic's aimed at sort of young adults? And I certainly feel that you should be able to put nudity in there if it's not super overt or, I guess, moist is a good descriptor.
Okay, that's a, okay.
Yeah, I
that's a way of putting
translates
it.
Translates a little more severely over on this over here.
Yeah. It's always been an issue. I mean, I've for a long time followed comics which have a lot of quite heavy sexual tension in them, but don't have nudity, which sometimes seems odd. And there's some comics which kind of go out of their way to avoid having nudity, which also detracts from the comic. And it's a very difficult issue,
yeah.
Partly because, for example, I mean, even though I'm writing from Australia and I don't make any kind of effort to promote my comic specifically to Americans, about, I think, 70% or 80% of my readership is American. And America, as you say, has fairly strong views on nudity.
Yeah, there's not enough of it.
Yeah.
But in terms of
advertising and being able to promote your comic in various places, I've certainly had people say, you know, you have one boob in your comic. I cannot ever promote this, or I'm going to have to put like an R18 plus rating on it. Mm-hmm. Or this sort of stuff. So, and the other comic I was going to bring up is The Meek, which I think did a really, really fantastic job of having nudity as it's almost a definite part of the story, but it's even in potentially sexual situations, it's never sexualized. And it's very, very well done, I think.
See, it actually reminds me back to the first Austin Powers movie, where they had him and I forget who the female lead in the movie was, you know, walking around naked with just things that just happened to be in the way of any naughty bits that could be seen. And it was really well done, well timed. And granted, it was done for comedy's sake, but it did show that stuff like that could be done. Just, you know, it bordered on that sexuality humor versus... where we see with the John Carter story here, where it was just matter of fact, they just happened to be nude. And we do see the Disneyfication of a movie or a property. I mean, all the way back to Snow White, where she did not live happily ever after. The Little Mermaid did not live happily ever after. Beauty and the Beast did not live happily ever after. But the Disneyfication of movies does take out a lot of the edge, which is in the original source material. And that was, I'll be honest, I have not seen John Carter, the movie, yet. I want to. Timing has not been right. But I do not expect it to be completely faithful to the original source material, even though producer-director Andrew Stanton, who came to Disney from Pixar and produced some marvelous movies, he's going to be hamstrung by the corporate culture over there for what is expected for something with the Disney name.
Yeah, well, I mean, to go back a bit... America does have this problem that nudity equals obscene. Nude equals obscene. If you have any pictures of someone naked or any pictures of genitalia or anything like that, then you're obscene. And you run into these problems, you know, not just with your readers, but on a lot of levels. If you have nudity, it is considered obscene. And it flies in the face of a lot of other cultures. And there have been a couple of other comics that do this sort of, you know, yeah, people are naked, but this is not an obscene thing out there. And a couple of webcomics who have done it. And it's a couple others I was mentioning was Lox and Zooty, which is taking place in a nudist colony. And then Rogues of Clan Ron by Rainier. Both of which, just nudity is just part of the story. There, it's something that's in there, and it can be done, but it really is a hard thing to do well.
Well, it's like the old saying: the only thing wrong with a nudist colony is there is no quality control.
Well, I mean, I think that's how you actually do it well.
Yep. Well, and speaking about control, let's go ahead and go over to our next subject because we're running short on time now. And that is about the U.S. Justice Department warning not actually doing anything, but just warning Apple and five of the other biggest U.S. publishers of e-books. I noticed that they don't mention the other stories, other publishers in the opening paragraph, about colluding with each other to raise the price of electronic books.
Right.
Now, we can go on. Is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? But it's more a matter of, is this a true thing? Or is this something that we've seen where the Justice Department is, you know, well, there's a coincidence of this thing, and they're going after it like there may be a real thing. Now, the other five publishers are Simon & Schuster, owned by CBS, Legendaire SCA's Hachette Book Group, Well, I like Hachette because it's a cut-up job. Pearson's PLC's Penguin Group, that does a lot of paperbacks. Macmillan, a unit of, oh boy, I'm going to mangle this one, Verlag's Group, George von Holtbrink, GmbH, Germany, and HarperCollins Publishers, a division of News Group, which also owns the Wall Street Journal, which is where the story comes from. Now, of course, the spokespeople for the publishers and the Justice Department declined to comment on the whole thing.
Well, it's, it's not an ongoing case, but it's a pending case, so they don't want to put anything out.
Well, it's also the leaking of this story. The timing was extremely suspicious because this came out at the exact same time the release and the announcement about the new iPads came out as well. And again, opening with mentioning Apple only just stinks to high heaven.
No, go ahead.
I think you're seeing conspiracies where they're not one. I mean, this will not affect sales of iPads. It has nothing to do with that. The simple fact is there was – Apple did get together with all the publishers just like Apple got together with all the music publishers and said, we're going to set a price of an ebook at this price, you know. And they said, we're going to set it for music. They set it at a dollar. For ebooks, they set it for $14. Now, both of those are technically price fixing. You're fixing a price and you have sole control of a marketplace. So you are price fixing on that marketplace, that by the definition. Now, technically, the Justice Department could go after them for the 99 cents on music, but that would seem a little silly. I think the only reason that they're doing this is the Justice Department saying to Apple, you know, the price you fix things at seems a little high. Well, I think it's really what that is. And I think we're going to just see Apple's going to say, all right, we'll lower it to $5, you know.
Well, and they go to the quote from Steve Jobs himself as within the biography by Walter Isaacson. He said that we were going to be moving it to an agency model under which the publishers would set the price of the book and Apple would take a 30% cut. To quote Jobs, we told the publishers, we'll go to the agency model where you set the price and we get our 30%. And yes, the customer pays a little more, but that's what you want anyway. it would be the same thing. I mean, you talked about the music, them charging 99 cents. Remember, that's 99 cents per song. You can buy the album for various prices as well. Would they have a problem with it if they sold it 99 cents per chapter and then had a price for the whole book? It's basically the same thing.
I think what the thing is that they are claiming that it's an agency model, and then all of the publishers came out with the exact same price on books, you know, and that looks a little weird.
But was it a situation of we've got no information about it. This is all hypothesis. But I mean, we saw with iTunes, Jobs had them come out with 99 cents per song, and then the other companies that came in afterwards followed suit. Was it a situation of them colluding, or was it a situation of them following the leader?
Not only that, but the idea of a single price for music, so like a single price for a track or a single price for a book, is ridiculous. Like, there are books that probably cost 20 times as much to write as other books. So having a set price is not intuitive, really. It doesn't help the content creator because it's going to make them be more inclined to undersell, so they'll do as cheaply as possible because they've got a set price. It's not like it's worth putting the extra effort in because you're not going to get any more value out of it. It's not a good system.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, when music was first being added, Steve Jobs had to hold the line because what the music publishers wanted to do is they wanted to sell old songs at like 15 cents. and they wanted to sell the new popular songs at $3-4. And in the current system, Jobs knew that would be chaos. And it wouldn't get the thing, the medium to take off. With ebooks, it looks like they're using the same method. Everyone sets it at the same price, but they're setting it a little high where the music was set a little low. And they're also, you know, this is also not a situation where iTunes is just taking off now. They've been going for a while. It doesn't need the fixed price anymore. And so they said they were going to use an agency model, but then the agency model looked exactly like everyone setting their – colluding to set the same price.
I still wonder how much of it is because we saw from the quote from Jobs, you know, it was saying the publishers will go through this and then Apple will just tack on its 30%, which yeah. is something I'm sure that the other e-publishing are doing as well. How much of it is Apple? How much of it is the publishing companies? I mean, are we seeing Barnes & Noble getting a cut out of this stuff on their e-site, or is it all going down to publishers?
I mean, it's direct to the publishers through Apple. I think most likely, and I don't think anything is going to come from this. I think this is the Justice Department using their ability to warn to push down prices. I mean, I think the simple fact is this warning will cause prices to drop because companies will start saying, well, we don't want to get in trouble for this. And they'll let the prices of their medium float a little more. They won't all have the same price, which will be better for the consumer, except if you're producing web comics on that marketplace, because that's going to depress your price that you can charge as well.
And let's go ahead and wrap up the discussion on this one. We've got one more category we want to talk about, and that was the 16 awesome websites, apps, and tools for web cartoonists. We're going to go ahead and run down through the sites that they list on this and give our opinions on this. And let's start off with Google Analytics.
I've tried to use this, but unfortunately, because I'm running Comic Express, which makes it a little bit tricky to figure muck around with your back end, I haven't got it working, and I don't want to muck around with the code that I have about as much understanding as I do of Celestial Dynamics. So,
I found Google Analytics very difficult to use, and even though some of the information is very informative, Google Analytics, there are just better tools out there than that, in my opinion.
Google Analytics is very useful and very complicated. Unless you have time to figure it out, or find a simpler statistic program, because Google Analytics is able to tell you a whole bunch of stuff that usually you don't care about. It's really designed for high power stuff. It's a good tool, but it does take time to figure out. And the comment on the Comic Press thing: there are plugins that you can get that will automatically sync up your site with Google Analytics.
Okay, next topic. Well, let's go ahead. We're running short on time on this one, so let's go over to Google Email. We'll talk about that stuff off the podcast. Google Email, Gmail, as it's called. I find that this is very helpful. I still have a problem with it tagging some of the stuff that I want to get through as junk mail, but you can't beat the price, and it's been a lot more efficient than Hotmail was since Microsoft took it over.
Right.
Yeah. I can't agree more. Gmail, if you want to have an email for anything, just get a Gmail. It's pretty easy.
Yep.
I've got like 3 or 4 running for different things.
And they do have a way to set it up with your own domain as well. I mean, you can have whatever at whatever.com or .net that you want. I'm sure there's an added cost for that type of stuff, but it's a great way for you to do it.
It's free.
Oh, yep. Well then.
The only thing that costs is your time.
Next up is one more thing from Google, and that's the Google Reader. At first blush, it seems to be nothing more really than an RSS reader that's all put together within Google.
Yep.
And that's what it is. It's a fine RSS reader, though.
I don't see the use for a content creator other than it's a way for them to know, oh, there are still people who read RSS. We've got to have an RSS feed on our site.
Yeah. I somewhat disagree with the whole RSS thing, by the way, because ultimately they're just seeing your page. They're not seeing any of the other content.
Like the advertising.
Unless you syndicated your news, like the advertising. I mean, it's not like I care because I get about 20 cents for advertising a day. but it's still sort of, there's that, again, moral issue of you could at the very least visit the site. I mean, I'm giving you all this stuff for free, working 6 or 7 hours a day just to do it. Is it too much to ask just to, you know, put that in your bookmarks and come and visit? Because not just because I'm getting advertising, but because I put other stuff up on the comic site as well that might be interesting and you're missing if you just read the RSS.
Absolutely. Okay, next up is one that I disagree with in their writing on this, and this is the Rackspace Cloud Server. It's a web hosting system. Price varies, even though they say that the ease of use is very advanced. They say, quote, there's all kinds of web hosting out there, but when you're really serious about keeping your cartoons up and running, a Rackspace Cloud Server is the way to go. There are a lot of hosts out there that give excellent service. This is a free plug, but over at 910, we use, now I can't even think of my own site. But there are many, many servers out there that do some excellent jobs.
Yeah.
Not just this one. And granted, the various prices are going to be, I mean, you can get a $5 web server or a free web server, and you'll get exactly what you pay for it in most cases. Others, you can be spending a couple hundred for a dedicated server over off a backbone, like we do at SoftLayer, softlayer.com, and get some great service where you run everything, but they just take care of the hardware and the connection itself.
Yeah. Pick the server that is best suited for your technical skills and the time you want to invest, because there are plenty of people out there, are plenty of places where you pay a little bit more, but then they take care of all the work for you. And then there are plenty of other places where they'll let you do everything yourself, and it really is your own technical skill and the amount of time you have to invest it. The rule of all of the things we're going through, think about how much time you have to do these things.
Exactly. Next up, we're going to skip past a few things. We're going to go over to, which personally I can't see any use for a webcomic creator, content creator. But we're going to go to Dropbox, where it is, like we've seen from things in the news recently, like Mega Upload. It's simply a where you get an account, you can drop stuff up there and have people download it from there. This, it can be dangerous, but I can see where some of the features, if you've got a free web host and you're limited on space for things to, for free content, this can be a way to do it, whether it be Dropbox or some of the other things out there. But in this age of the witch hunt, I mean, you don't know when it's going to go down.
Yeah, it depends, though, but Dropbox will limit you, though. I mean, I think that Earl Stevens over at Diesel Sweeties, he first introduced that ebook that he did through the new Apple ebook creator. He had posted it up on Dropbox, and they instantly shut it down because there were so many downloads.
Yeah.
It's Dropbox, not they shut it down. It's that you have a certain amount of downloads.
That's right.
Like, they, you can't actually, I think you can maybe get 300 or 400 megabyte worth of a single thing being downloaded, and then that you won't be able to get it for another month or so.
Okay. Dropbox is not designed for sharing with the public. Dropbox is designed for sharing with yourself and other collaborators.
Yep.
And there's a lot. Sense,
as someone who works with other, as someone who works with other artists and someone who goes from one computer onto another, it is wonderful. It is wonderful to always have access to your files, but it's not something you share with other people.
Okay, we're really running short on time, so let's go ahead and do the speed round with this one. I'll list what it is, and you people give me a one-sentence description of what you think of it. Next up, PayPal. Stefan.
It's okay. It's not great, but it works.
Eric.
The only game in town, but can be evil when they choose.
Jason.
Same deal. The only game in town, and yeah, they can really mess you up if you don't do it right.
It's not the only game down, but it's definitely the 2,000-pound gorilla. And if you do something that they do not like, they will shut down your account quicker than you can say Jack Robinson.
And keep your money.
Next up, yes. Authorize.net, used for handling e-commerce and credit cards.
I've never saw anything. Yes, never. So, no idea.
I've used it. It's actually very nice to use. But there's a lot of paperwork and a lot of rigmarole you have to go through for credit cards. Let's see. Next up, WordPress. I'm going to start off with you, Stefan, because you specifically mentioned that you use ComExpress for WordPress.
I use CM Express, not Com Express.
Oh, so you use a good program.
Our special little one, yeah. And no, I haven't used it, so I can't really tell you.
Okay, Eric or Jason, have either of you used WordPress?
I use it exclusively. It's easy to do simple things, difficult to do anything beyond simple. If you just look for a basic site, best way to do it. Anything more complex, you're going to be spending a lot of time learning stuff.
And I'm kind of in the middle of that now, so it works for what you need.
Okay, and we'll round this off with one called 1Password. It's an application where you basically it generates random passwords for you, but you can lock it with 1Password. Eric, we'll start off with you.
No idea.
Yeah, no idea.
If somebody wants to use it and come back to us, we'll be happy to hear it. Just let us know what the password is.
But that wraps it up today. I mean, you can see more information about the items that we skipped over, as well as links to all of our other stories that we mentioned here on the cast over at newscast.webcomicbeacon.com. And I want to thank all of our guests and our regulars here. We'll start off with our guest from Hero in Training. That's herointraining.com, one of the many sites hosted over at 910CMX. There is no Saurus, Stefan Martin Ross.
It's herointrainingcomic.com, all one word, but more or less correct. And thank you. It's been fun.
I only run this stuff. I don't have anything to do with it. We also have our associate news editor, Jason Strasberg.
Thanks, Tom. Have a good week, everybody.
From BladeBunny.com and so many other things, Eric Kimball.
Thanks, Tom. Although not really many other things, but okay.
And, yeah, that leaves it up to me. I'm Thomas Revor, the guy in charge over at 910 Comics that doesn't even know what sites these domains are at. That's 910cmx.com. That one I've got down. And, yeah, have a good week, everybody. We'll see you in the funny papers.